Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Many of us will be hitting the road this summer, and usually right before that trip, you notice that odd little sound your engine is making. Thunk, thunk. And over the course of the week, it gets louder, like the theme from Jaws. Thunk, 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 until right before you have to leave on vacation and your car breaks down. Oh, it's the stuff of nightmares. Well, here to make sure that doesn't happen is Gordon Fricke. He is our car expert on Vox Pop. You got a car issue, maybe a maintenance question? Give us a call now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon is a popular guest. I advise you to call early. You can email voxpop@wamc.org if you wish, but the number is 800-348-2551. Cars coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions, none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility. He has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, and this script is probably 9 years old, so it's probably closer to 40 years. The number to call with your question if you have a question about your car or your truck or your motorcycle, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back, sir. How you doing?
Hello, Ray. Great to be back. And I'm sorry I can't be sitting in the studio with you.
Well, I'm, you know,
thanking you. I'm glad you can take me on the phone. I'm caught up in that scenario that so many other businesses are in. We can't hire any help. There's nothing. There's nobody out there. I don't know where they all went.
Hey, listen, I'm keen to learn. You know, I'll give you a couple hours a week, right?
Come on up.
What could go wrong? Oh, the answer is, of course, everything. It's a busy time for you, though, right?
It is. Summer's the worst time, and I shouldn't say worst. It's busy because everybody's driving.
Yeah.
They're traveling now like crazy because nobody could last year. So, and it's vacation time, so, you know, everybody's doing other things, and we're trying to do the same thing, so it's just a challenging season.
Well, you know, I think almost every time I have been to see you at your shop, it's pretty busy. So I imagine that winter, spring, summer, or fall, you're doing pretty good over there.
Well, there's usually not a lot of lying around and, you know, being bored, that's for sure.
This email came in from Beth in West Hurley, who says, I love the show, which is amazing. I think that she might have the wrong channel. I know Beth writes, I have a 2008 Toyota RAV4 whose check engine, VSC and four-wheel drive lights have stayed on despite having both the oxygen sensors changed according to the P0033 code that I hate so much. Have cleared it out twice. The lights come back at exactly 40 miles. It's in need of inspection. Hate to keep throwing money at it. Help. That's from Beth in West Hurley. Beth, I feel your pain intimately.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you get a particular code, and that code talks about something like, let's say, oxygen sensor, bank one, sensor two.
Yep.
It doesn't always mean that the sensor is the culprit. It means that something in that circuit from the computer to the sensor and then back again is not working properly. And the computer recognized the failure or the discrepancy and turned the light on. Sometimes it's purely the part, the sensor or the, you know, the switch or whatever it may be. But when we scan a car, our professional equipment has a statement that it makes every time. And it says, do not replace components and parts based on codes alone. So there's unfortunately, there's just more digging and diagnostic work that's going to be necessary to figure out why her light keeps coming on for that particular code. It could be a bad connection somewhere in the circuit, one of the plugs that go into the computer or at the sensor, but it's going to be more time and more hair pulled out.
It really is annoying, and those O2 sensors drive me nuts, too. I have one in my Nissan Pathfinder that you and I have both looked at for a couple of years. Get it to work for a while, the light keeps coming back, and I... you know, I'm cleaning contacts, I'm cleaning the device, and it just, yep. it doesn't stop, man. I can clear it for maybe 100 miles, and then it comes back.
Yep, yep. That's the discrepancy in all these circuits and temperature variations and corrosion and age. It's tough.
This email from Richard, and Richard writes, my 2010 Outback has 209,000 miles. I only now use it for local trips, less than 10 miles one way. Would it be best to switch to full synthetic engine oil instead of conventional engine oil, which is what I've always used?
Not a bad idea, really. What year was the car rated? Did you already throw that paper away?
2010.
10, okay, yeah. So Subaru, not too long after that, started recommending or using full synthetic in all their engines.
Yeah.
Not a problem at all switching that over to synthetic. So, yes, to answer the question, I think it's a good idea.
By the way, just in case you're about to call in and complain, any paper emails that I get on this program, I recycle them. We don't throw them away. So,
I should have said that, yes.
You've been here. You've seen it, right?
But yes, I have.
You have the timing right, though. I do tend to dispense with them very quickly after we ask the question.
And I always ask you a question after you've dispensed of it.
Yeah, and I got to fish it out. Let's go to Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike.
Hey, hello, gentlemen. This is more of an auto body question, so I apologize in advance. But I fixed the backup camera in my 2013 Subaru Outback. Well, I replaced it, I should say. And ever since that, when I took all apart, put back together, now when it rains, I get some water in the back, the storage back area there. So I don't know. I even put the little black goop around the window in case it was coming in to seal there, but that doesn't seem to have stopped it. So I'm just saying, should I just bring it to an auto body guy to look at, or any suggestions?
So where does the water actually come in? Are you able to see that, or you just notice that after a big rain, it's wet back there?
More, yeah, I notice it after, and I could see it. Like when I'm driving, I can see the water dripping down inside the window instead of outside. Not a lot, but enough to bug
me. Yeah. So where is the camera on that? Is it up at the top of the tailgate where the brake light is?
It's down more towards the bottom, near, like below, I think, the license plate.
Okay,
area.
But you're seeing the dripping plate. Up higher?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yep. Subaru did have a fair amount of trouble with that center brake light leaking, that one up at the top of the tailgate.
Oh, okay.
And there's a pretty easy fix. You could do this yourself. Take the light out, and I think you're going to find the original seal doesn't look very good anymore. And you could reseal that with silicone sealer, like at a hardware store. Just get a small tube. You can snip the nozzle off, so it gives you a very, very small bead when you squeeze it out.
Yeah.
And you can seal that light back into the housing where it meets the body of the car. And that's where your leak's going to be. Uh-huh. I fixed them before.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a car question. Let's grab one more before our first break. Elliot in Germantown. Elliot, you're on.
Hey, how you doing, guys? How's everybody? Good.
Good. Oh, that's a bad connection.
Okay.
Hey, Elliot. Elliot, your connection's very bad. Can you perhaps move a little bit to side to side? Can you do the hokey pokey?
Yes, I'm hearing. Yeah, I'm doing the hokey pokey, and you turn yourself about.
That's
How
correct,
do you hear
sir.
Me now?
I very well, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, Gordon, I bought a bad water pump from you.
What?
You did?
That's right. And the guy I brought it back to, behind the counter, he was sucking on his teeth and looking in every direction,
oh,
but in mine.
I think that you might have the wrong guy there, Elliot.
I think you do, because we don't sell parts.
That's interesting. Elliot, thanks for the call. That's an interesting one. Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. On the other hand, Elliot had the wrong place, but he did do the hokey pokey, so he wins valuable prizes for that. Let's It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rig Raff with you. It's Automotive Maintenance and Repair with Gordon Fricke. The number is 800-348-2551. A couple of emails here from various folks, Gordon, and then we'll go back to the phones. None from Elliot. This one is from Catherine. My 2008 Toyota RAV4 had a complete battery fail. The key fob wouldn't even open the door. AAA brought me a new battery, but there was an engine and oil light showing. Being a holiday weekend, I was going to have it towed to my mechanic this week, but the next day I gave it a try and it started and has been running smoothly ever since with no alerts. Is it possible that once the new battery was installed, everything took a day to reset?
Well, so apparently she had some warning lights on prior. Is that what you're thinking, Ray?
Yeah.
So when you take the battery out of a car, it does clear the codes out of most of the modules, not all of them, but it'll do the engine. So if you had a check engine light on, it would put everything back to zero and the computer would start retesting. So if the problem was intermittent or, you know, just barely was out of the range of turning the light on, she did a code clear by proxy or by accident, and that's what turned everything off. Whether they'll come back on after a few days or weeks of driving is to be seen. But that's what she did. She inadvertently cleared her codes out, or they did, when they changed the battery.
All right, Gordon Fricke is our guest. This one's from Mark. Mark says, my question is about brake pads. In the old days, we used to take our cars in from time to time just to have the brake pads changed. But whenever you try that these days, the service advisors say it's best to change the rotors at the same time. We used to change pads regularly to make the rotors last longer. Are we just being scammed into spending more on rotors now, or have things really changed? What's going on? That's remarkable.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because I think I talk about that to customers about every day or every other day.
Yeah.
So turn the clock back, I don't know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, disc brake systems were primarily just on the fronts of vehicles. And they were big and they were heavy and they were of pretty good quality metal.
Yeah.
So there were times where you could get away with leaving the rotors alone and putting new pads on it. And sometimes you'd make it through the next set of pads. Other times the rotors would get warped. They'd be pulsing or whatever. We used to machine those rotors too, because they were built thicker and heavier. Now they are much thinner and lighter. They're of the knockoff design. The grade of the cast iron, I think, has deteriorated because it's a lot of recycled from various overseas suppliers.
Yeah.
And they just don't make it anymore. By the time the pads have worn out, the rotors are gone.
Yeah.
And the odd thing is, not odd, but conversely, what we find today is we find more bad rotors that the pads still have a lot of life left, but the rotors are so horrible that you have to change everything.
Huh.
So, yes, things have changed, and pads and rotors are really almost always done together now.
Do they have some super high-priced aftermarket rotor you could say, hey, listen, I don't want to replace these rotors all the time. I'm willing to spend a lot for some really good metal. Can you get those?
Yes, you can. You can buy high-quality or high-performance rotors. They're very expensive. And they do last longer,
okay.
But I don't know if they're worth it. And you can't buy them for just any old car. You know, it's mainly for, you know, certain cars that people are trying to improve their braking system somewhat on.
All right. So you can't get it for, say, a 1987 Hyundai XL. That would not be.
Probably not, but right. You never know.
All right. Fair enough. The number here, by the way, and we'll get to the phones in just a moment, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. One more email for now, and then we will check the email bag later on as well. This one's from Ron. Subject heading, 1998 Lincoln Continental. I'm getting vibration in the accelerator pedal when reaching highway speeds. I also have some jangling for the front end when making tight turns. And that's from Ron.
Well, the vibration in the accelerator. So that car is old enough to where you are linked from your accelerator pedal right up under the hood. Did you throw the motor away? What year is it again? 80 what?
It's a 98. It's a 98.
1998. Okay. So that probably still has a throttle cable or linkage. So he's feeling a vibration from the engine transferring up through the pedal.
Ah.
So could be an engine mount. It could be an engine misfiring or not running quite right. So he's feeling something from the engine that's probably vibrating its way out to the gas pedal.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. You want to finish that up?
Well, there was a jingling in the front, but, you know, that could be a lot of things.
Yeah.
Brake hardware, sway bar links, that really needs to get checked in case it's a safety item, you know?
Yeah, you definitely don't want to mess around with the sway bar at all. So,
right.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones with Gordon Fricke, Randy, and Hadley. Randy, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you this afternoon?
Ah, you know, pretty good.
Good.
Good. Hey, I've got a 2016 Subaru Legacy electronic parking brake. I'm trying to change out the rear pads. I got everything apart. I have a Solus Ultra, and I was able to disengage the parking brake. Then I tried to put everything back together, and it wouldn't fit. So I assumed that the motor didn't turn the caliper pad thing there far enough back. So I tried to do it by hand, and now I got everything to fit, but the parking brake will not re-engage.
Okay. Yeah.
So would you say it was a Solus Ultra?
You there?
Hello?
Yep. Did you say?
Are you kidding me?
Randy?
No, Randy, are you there? We lost Randy?
Okay.
All right. Hello? Randy, are you still there?
Hello?
Hello.
Come on.
All right. Listen, we're going to answer your
question.
Randy
must have hit, I think Randy hit the mute button because we can hear him.
All right. So we're going to let Randy go before he swears. And frankly, the way things are going, I think that's where we're going to go. You answer the question and then he can listen later.
Yeah. So if Randy can hear us, when you command the calipers to retract the parking brakes, once that is completed, you then have to push the caliper pistons back like you always used to do. And I think Randy was thinking that the scan tool would pull the caliper pistons back together with the parking brakes, so he missed a step.
Yeah.
Now that he's got it all back together, the system is confused. It doesn't know where the parking brakes are supposed to be. So he's got to initiate a parking brake test or open-close operation, and hopefully he can get the car to remember or refigure out where the brake calipers are.
What do you think the odds are that that will happen, Gordon? Randy is back, by the way.
Randy's back?
Yeah.
He's back.
Okay, Randy. Did you hear anything?
I did hear that. I understand that I've got to somehow get the car to know where it's at. And I don't know, did I do something wrong by manually turning those motors?
Well, you might have. See, when you command those calipers to go to brake pad service, they wind the parking brakes back, but you then have to push those pistons of the calipers back in yourself.
Okay.
So once you've pushed those calipers open, just like you did before they had parking brakes built in, you then put all your stuff together, and then you commanded the calipers to go back to closed position. And then they wind up and lock up, and then they back off, so they realized where they are. So you've got to go in there and command it to do a relearn of the parking brakes, you know, open, shut procedure. Just like go through a brake pad service, but don't change anything. Just command the car to act as though you're changing the brake pads all over again.
Okay, Randy.
Okay, it seemed. Yeah, well, one last thing. The Solus seems to be stuck in. It's waiting for me to finish up, and it won't let me. So if I disconnect it and try again, you think that'll work?
Yeah, because you're too deep now anyway, so you might as well kill the whole test and go right back in there. Go back in there like you're doing it all over again.
All right, Randy, thanks for trying and getting back here on what is turning out to be travesty technologically. Let's go to Tony in New Lebanon. Tony, you're on.
Thank you for taking the call.
You bet. All right, you're on.
You wanted,
go ahead, man.
You got a 2010 Ranger, about 98,000 miles. Turn signals are not working intermittently. The left-hand stalk is where this happens, with the turn signal up and down on the stalk. Everything else on the stalk works. Intermittent wipers, wipers on and off, windshield wiper spray. All that stuff works. Just the turn signals on that same stalk don't work intermittently. And right now they're not working.
So when they don't work, you're getting zero lighting from anything. Not even the indicator on your dashboard?
Correct.
If
the headlights
you...
do work. The headlights do work, and they do go on and off, high beam, low beam, with the same stalk. The four-way flasher, by the way, also works, which I'm told goes through that same thing.
Yes. Some of those vehicles had two flashers, one for the four-ways, one for the directionals. I don't know on your Ranger, but I would... go in there and be sure you don't have a separate flasher unit for the directionals, because if that flasher unit is getting tired out, it can fail like that, and it could be that simple, very quick and easy to change that flasher unit.
Will my manual tell me whether I've got separate flashers?
I think it might. Back then, the manuals told people more stuff, so I think, or you could get on the internet and you could probably find that. And or if you get them to work, follow the sound of the flasher when they are working.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You know, if you get them to a moment when they're currently working, keep it blinking and you'll just follow that noise and you'll find that flasher. The other thing you could be running into is that switch in the column could be failing.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, that has the directionals in it. But that's an older vehicle. I can't remember what type of a switch there is in there. If that's, you know, easy to change, just bolts to the side of the column. But
no, this is in the stalk.
Yeah, so I would first confirm the flasher, and then maybe, you know, what I do with those older ones is I wiggle that switch all over the place and see if you can make it work. If you find a bad spot in it, then you're going to end up replacing that switch that's hooked up to that stalk.
All right, Tony, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. The number here is 800-348-2551. The great Gordon Fricke joins us, automotive maintenance and repair, today on Vox Pop. Martha is in Goshen. Hello, Martha.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call today.
You bet.
We have a Volvo cross-country wagon. I think it's like a 2012 or so. We're sitting in a parking lot for maybe 2 days. We went in to use the car, and then the horn just kept blaring. Not intermittent like an alarm, but you know, just constant blaring. So much so, we tried turning off the car. So much so that we ended up having to snip the wire to stop the horn. What do you think? And is there a way to fix that? Or
yeah,
what are your thoughts?
So a 12 Volvo, I'm thinking that the horn request, in other words, when you push the, you know, the pad on the steering wheel to toot the horn, you're requesting
that. No, we never pushed.
You never pushed it.
We didn't push. No, we just turned the car on. Just
I understand that. Yeah, but it's a steady horn, not an alarm horn.
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. So the horn is being commanded to turn on, and that command on a 12 Volvo, I'm pretty certain, goes through the body control module, one of the modules, one of the computers, where older cars had what was a relay, So the relay could be stuck on.
Yeah.
Or something in the horn pad could be stuck on. But in your car, it's new enough to where it could be a horn command in the module that is causing it to come on, unless there's been something added to the car aftermarket, you know, some type of an alarm or security system that went in, you know, after the car was produced. But you will have to bring that into a shop, and there's a remote chance that when they hook it all up, everything's going to be fine. But that's what they've got to try first.
Yikes.
Except for our snip wire. Okay, thanks a lot. Have a good way.
Martha, thanks a lot. You know, so the horn is hooked up to the computer? Can
everything is a request.
That's ridiculous.
In other words, you request to give the engine throttle. You request the blinkers to turn on the left side. You request the horn to come on. These all go through computers now. You're not linked to any of that stuff directly.
Ah, Gordon, I could go on a rant for the rest of the show, but we'll just take another call. Molly in Albany. Molly is on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, Gordon. I have a quick question for you about my 2010 Audi Q5.
Sure.
It has 135,000 miles, and I'd like it to keep alive for me for a lot longer. And I wonder, does it need a timing belt replacement, and what other service would you recommend?
So that year, the engines did not have timing belts. They had chains. So it's an internally driven chain that requires no maintenance. However, it lives in the engine oil. And the best way to keep all that stuff young and in good shape is to change the oil frequently. And Audi's intervals are way, way too long. They're saying do it every 10,000 miles under ideal conditions. And we don't drive in ideal conditions up here by any stretch in the Northeast. So oil changes are extremely important from day one. And the older the car gets, a lot of people start to slack off. They say, this thing has got 150,000 miles on. I don't need to take such good care of it anymore. And that's when you slide down the slope with it. So, you know, oil changes and regular maintenance are key to keeping any car alive as long as possible.
Great.
Did that answer your question?
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Molly. Okay. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Automotive Maintenance and Repair today, and the number is 800-348-2551. Spencer in New Paltz. Spencer, you're up.
Hey, Ray, I just want to clarify something for you. You've heard me before and wonder what the story is, so I'll just tell you real quick. We live in Tilson, governed by Rosendale, with a New Paltz address in the Kingston School District.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, hang on. I'll write that down, and we'll have it right for the next time you call, Spencer. But welcome to the show.
Okay, so here it is. I had a code throw up in my truck this morning. It says purge valve malfunction, and I want to just clarify what function the purge valve actually does.
Is it a Chevrolet?
No, it's an old Ford Ranger, 97, 2.3.
A Ranger, okay. So, well, they all have the same valve. That's a common code in all those vehicles, but the purge valve is an electrically operated valve, a solenoid valve, that when the computer commands it to open, it pulls the latent fuel or gasoline vapors out of the charcoal canister that has been collected from your gas tank, and it brings them to the engine. The engine burns them up, and they're less pollutant when they come out the tailpipe than they are if they leak out of the gas tank vent. So anyway, that's what that purge valve is, and they fail a lot, and they stop opening, or they get stuck, or they, you know, stick open and cause the check engine light to come on, and they can create some starting problems, particularly after you fill the tank up. So yeah, it's on just about every vehicle, probably is on every single vehicle now.
Okay, so I did order one, so if it's supposed to be in tomorrow, but I'm not in any danger if I just drive it for a little while till the part comes
out. No, you're not going to harm the engine or, you know, no really big ill effects. But you should change it, and with any luck, that will totally solve that code, and you'll be good.
Spencer, thanks a lot. We're going to take a quick break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And the number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Home stretch straight ahead. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke joins us from the shop, Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. This email from Wayne in Stone Ridge. Wayne says, I have a 2010 Toyota Prius that I bought in 2013. It's always had a fog to the headlight covers, causes the headlights to be dim. Is there a fix for that?
If he's talking about the lenses themselves getting like faded or discolored, that is primarily from the sunlight. You know, the sun beats up that plastic.
Yeah.
I don't think he's referring to moisture or fog inside. I think he's talking about the lenses getting cloudy.
Yeah.
So there's some quick fixes. There's some liquids that you can buy that you put on the exterior of the lens, and it smooths them out and makes them clear for a while, and you can keep applying that. They make buffing kits to buff them down, but at some point it gets too thick, and it's also going to affect the plastic deeper than you can clean it, and you end up having to replace the headlights. But I would try the liquids first, or maybe get them buffed. There's shops that have little buffing kits, and sometimes that totally restores them. Last resort, if all that fails, you got to replace them.
You know, it's so funny. You see the ads for the this miracle liquid that does this and gets rid of the fog.
Yes.
One of my old 99 DeVilles way back when, I'm in the parking lot of this place to get some auto parts. And there are a couple of shady characters who are standing there saying, hey, buddy, get over here. $5. I'll get rid of that cloudy off your. Well, I thought I was going to get knifed. So I gave them $5 and they put it on and it worked. For about a week to 2 weeks. What does it exactly do?
It's just like Armor All or those dressings that you put on to shine things up temporarily on your plastic or vinyl on your tires. It fills in all those little voids and all that roughness with a film of probably silicone or some other gooey liquids, and until it washes away or evaporates away, it makes them clear. I use it. It's quick and easy. You know, you wipe it on, and you know, sometimes you're good for a month, you know, or longer.
Yeah, I'm not sure what these guys had, but it wasn't in any sort of a commercial bottle. It was, let's just say it was a little sketchy, but we all survived.
Maybe it was some kind of marijuana oil.
Well, you know, I don't know. It was several years ago, but it's possible. This is from Jerry in Gilderland. Jerry says, is it important to use top-tier gas in my VW Taiguan 2019? The manual recommends it.
Yeah, that's a great question because I talk about this a lot, and basically almost all of the current internal combustion engines are using direct injection technology.
Yeah.
And even if they aren't, there is a difference in what's called top-tier gasoline. And those are, you can go on the internet and search what fuel companies provide top-tier gas. They have to meet certain standards. And it's your big names for sure. It's like Shell, Mobil, Citgo, Texaco, all those big names, among others, pass all these guidelines for maximum amounts of detergents and cleaners and quality.
Yeah.
And to answer his question, for that Tiguan, which is a turbocharged direct injected engine, definitely use top tier gasoline, 100%, because it will prevent him from very costly carbon removal procedures when that car gets some miles on it.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. Back to the phones we go. Dave in East Hampton. Dave, you're on.
Hey, how's it going today, guys?
Good.
I got a cold weather question.
Nice.
I got an 09 Subaru Forester, 126,000 miles. And if it's below freezing and I start the car up in the morning and drive, when it shifts into fourth gear, it shifts hard. Once it does that, it never shifts hard at all the whole day. You can even turn the car off for hours, get back in, and will not shift hard. Or in the morning, I can shift this car into like standard, like the paddles. And if I drive the car that way first thing in the morning, and then when I shift it into fourth, it goes in easy. Then if I put it back into the automatic, it never shifts hard again.
Hmm.
It's only that one shot in the morning, and it's got to be below freezing.
Yeah, that more than likely is probably a unique characteristic with your car, because it's so temperature specific and it only does it that one time. If you were to talk to a transmission shop, maybe they'd have some insight into that, saying yes, those cars all had that little glitch in them. The only thing I would recommend is, and maybe you've already done this, is to have changed the transmission fluid. Have you done that at any regular intervals on that car?
I did it maybe 20,000 when I first got the car.
Yep. And Subaru has a pretty simple drain and refill procedure on those automatics. It's not, what year did you say? Was it 09?
Correct, but 126,000.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it certainly would not hurt to change that fluid again. It may not have any effect on that fourth gear, but it's a good maintenance practice. It's not expensive. It's easy to do. I would do that before cold weather or anytime before winter, you know, just to see if it changed anything.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's automotive maintenance and repair today on the program. The number is 800-348-2551. Phil is in Amsterdam. Hello there, Phil.
Hi. Hi. I've got a 2006 Matrix, and the clutch, it always grinded when you put it in the gear. So we replaced the clutch at around 80,000, and it still grinds. Do you have any ideas why that was? It improperly seated or done or what?
So it grinds when you're selecting what, first and reverse only?
No, it goes from second to third. It grinds.
So you only get the grind when you go from second gear to third gear?
Yeah.
All the other gear changes are normal?
Yeah.
And how about when you go to put it in reverse? Is that pretty decent and easy to put it into reverse?
Yes, yes.
Okay. How many miles are on the car roughly?
About 140.
Okay. What I'm afraid to say is you've got a problem with the synchronizers from going from second to third gear, which is an internal transmission problem. And if you can, when you do that shift from second to third, if you get really crafty about timing up the engine and the transmission speeds, you might be able to almost eliminate that just by technique.
Hmm.
Because fixing it's expensive. That's a total transmission teardown. So it may be, you know, cost prohibitive to do that whole thing at that stage of the car's life. But I don't believe it's a clutch concern. I think it's a synchronizer issue between second and third gears, which is totally internal.
So what do you got to have it slow down the gear or motor?
Try to shift it at different speeds. In other words, try to shift it a little slower. Try to get the engine and transmission speeds closer together. You might blip the throttle. I doubt it'll make any difference, but it would always be a good idea to make sure that the gear oil is at the full mark and looks good. Changing it on a manual is really probably not going to make any difference to the transmission, but you still need to make sure the fluid is clean and at the correct level. But I think you got problem there.
Go ahead, Phil.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Phil. We appreciate the call. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Amy is in Kingston. Amy, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet.
Oh, okay. So my question, I'm hoping you can help me. I have a 2010 RAV4, and I have several repairs that sort of just happened, and it seemed like it happened in 2 weeks. I have a rear view mirror that someone smashed and didn't leave me a note. I have a CV boot that needs to be fixed. And I asked to just the CV boot be fixed, and most shops say they won't do that. They need to do a full axle. And I also need my rear shocks done. So I have all of these repairs, and I'm wondering if you have a suggestion on what needs to be done first, if money is an issue, or if I just have to bite the bullet, take it to a shop and get everything done.
Yeah. So the torn CV boot will eventually turn into a failing shaft or joint. You'll get clicking and vibrations and popping sounds. And the standard to repair those nowadays has become replace it with an axle, because it's much less labor. The cost of the drive axles has come down. The quality of the drive axles has also come down. Nice. Because we're sourcing them out from various overseas suppliers. But to change just the boot, sometimes you can do that if you can buy a quality boot, which you generally can. It depends if that joint has been open very long. If that joint has been exposed to the elements, the shaft may not live much longer. So guys want to replace the axle for peace of mind. You change the whole thing, you get new boots, you get a new axle, the part is under warranty, and, you know, it's a quicker job. So, I that's kind of become the standard in the industry. Probably pretty important to do. The mirror, well, it depends. Is it the driver's or passenger side?
Driver's. So it needs to be done.
Yeah.
That one's got to be there to, you know, that's the mirror you need to see and pass inspection and all that stuff. What was the third item?
Right. And rear shock.
Well, again, they're going to only get worse, and you're going to have a stability problem. You're going to be bouncing all over the road. That could definitely turn into a safety issue. I think I would just do it all, get it over with, then it's behind you.
Right. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
Amy, thanks a lot. David, that's the wrong line there, Ray. You lost your touch. David and Canajoharie. David, you're on.
Yeah, thanks. I have a 2004 Honda Odyssey, and what I'm going to talk about doesn't happen all the time, but it happens with increasing frequency. I turn the car on, and the engine starts fine, and it's an automatic transmission. The dashboard doesn't display any gear, and I can't get it out of park. And then I wait for a while, and the dashboard displays drive, and I can't get it out of park. And then I wait for a while longer, and the dashboard displays park, and I can get out of park, and everything works fine. And every now and then, I turn the key, and nothing happens.
Hmm. You mean it won't start?
No, it doesn't. Nothing happens. It doesn't start. It doesn't.
Total silence.
Doesn't turn over. Doesn't do anything.
Yep. Yeah, no lighting, no dash lights, absolutely black?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know if those two are related.
Okay.
They could be. That could be a variety of causes. You always want to start with the simple things and make sure that the connections to the battery are clean and corrosion-free. If they're all corroded and look like snowballs and the battery's ancient, you know, that all needs to be tended to. The problem with the transmission not knowing what gear it's in at different times, there is a mode position switch that tells the computer what gear you're really in or asking to be in. And that switch could be confused. It could be going bad and confusing the computer, and it thinks you're in reverse or it thinks you're in drive. And if it doesn't see park or neutral, it won't crank or start the engine. So I'd be suspicious of the range position sensor or switch. And that can be scanned with the right equipment, providing it's in the fail mode. And if it goes to the repair shop or the dealer with everything working, they may have trouble finding out what is happening, but I would get it checked before too long.
Okay, well, that's... For the first live, are you hearing that, Zach? From the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Hi, everybody.
I am. In over a
year, you know, I love classical music. It's not really the time for it, but...
Did we tap into another radio station?
I don't know, but you know, the way things have been going today, Gordon, I just have no idea. Some days you wake up, I'm sure you have this in the garage too. You wake up and you say, you know, why do I even bother going to work? You know, you get those days? I mean, what?
Yes, I do.
What in blue blazes was that? All right, well, listen.
That was excellent.
Yeah, okay, that's one way to describe it. Maybe Elliot will call up about the water pump again. Let's go to
Brock and
Troy. Brock, you're on. Hello, Brock.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, you got a couple of minutes here. Go.
All right, yeah, so I got a 2016 Honda HR-V, and when I had it in a little bit ago for service, for an oil change, they recommended the coolant flush because it had hit 100,000 miles. I opted not to get it done at the time. Then when I was getting tires a couple weeks ago, I was going to get it, and they said, oh, I'd wait till 130, 140. This is a different place. 130, 140, and I wouldn't do it in the summer. You want to do that in the fall. I was a little confused by that, being that it's coolant.
Yeah. Well, the time of the year to do it really doesn't matter. I would refer to your owner's manual, you know, the maintenance section in the owner's manual, and see what Honda does, when they recommend it, because coolant has really improved greatly over the decades, where it used to be a yearly thing. It started to get better and extended longer, and some vehicles do go like 10 years or 100 and something thousand miles before they need it. And it really does look and last that long under the right conditions. So refer to the manual. So, you know, the shop that wanted to change it, you know, maybe it was a prudent thing to recommend. The second shop maybe didn't want the big mess or didn't have time to do it. I don't know. But, you know, it's not the most fun job to do. So I'd look in your manual. Okay. And if they say do it at 90,000 or 110, just stick to that. They know.
All right, Brock, thanks a lot. Quickly here, we only have about 30 seconds. This email from Tom. I've had Volvos for years. What makes them safe? They have a reputation for being safe.
Yeah. They started that safety campaign, I think, in the late 60s or 70s, and they had a commercial where they stacked like 10 of these cars on top of each other.
Yeah.
And showed how strong the ones at the bottom were that could support 10 cars.
Right.
So, yes, strong build construction, attention to safety, early users of passive restraints and paddings and airbags and all that.
Yeah.
So they just got in there quick and marketed their safety features, but there is truth to it. Now, I would say that there's a lot of cars every bit as safe now.
Yes.
But back then, they were definitely a rugged, safe, well-built car.
All right, Gordon, we're done here unless you want to hear some more classical music in the waning moments.
Well, that was a nice thing. It just kind of came in at the wrong time, you know?
Wow, the veins in Zachary, our engineer's head, are starting to pop out again. All right, we'll get you some CPR if necessary there, Zach. Thank you. Hey, Gordon, thank you for being here, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Support comes from Elot Recycling Incorporated, Glenmont, full-service recycling company focusing on computer, electronics, battery, lamp, and bulb recycling, servicing municipalities, hospitals, schools, and businesses throughout New York State, ELOTRecycling.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Once again, thanks to our great guest, Gordon Fricke, for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the great call. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Molloy, who persevered through I guess it was Sibelius. I'm not sure what the classical music was, but it was delightful. Maybe some more tomorrow at 2 when we garden.